It seemed to Ralph's distorted vision to be the monarch of all buffalo, with a spread of horns wider than a man could reach, heavy as one of the granite boulders of the Metopus, so old that the points were worn blunt and rounded. His rump and back were grey and bald with age, the bush ticks hanging in blue grape-like bunches in the deep folds of skin on each side of his huge swinging testicles. Ralph's horse, almost blown now, could not hold him, and the bull was pulling away strongly, his huge quarters bunching and contracting, cloven hooves driving almost hock-deep into the soft sandy earth under the immense weight of his body. Ralph stood in the stirrups and aimed for the spine at the base of the bull's long tufted tail as it lashed his own sides in the fury of his run. At the instant that Ralph fired, a branch snatched at his shoulder, and the shot flew wide, socking meatily into the round black haunch. The bull tripped and checked, catching himself before he went down, swinging abruptly aside with blood spurting down his hind legs. Ralph gathered his exhausted horse to follow him, but another thick grey tree trunk sprang out of the dust clouds ahead and forced him to turn hard the other way to avoid it. Rough bark grazed his knee, and the bull was lost in the ranks of racing animals and the billowing dust. "Let him go!" Ralph shouted aloud. There was no chance that he could find a single animal again in this multitude. He cranked another cartridge into the scorching breech of his rifle and shot a sleek red queen through the back of the skull, and an instant later knocked her half-grown calf down with a bullet through the shoulder. The rifle was empty, and he began to reload, concentrating all his attention on the task, until suddenly some instinct warned him, and he glanced up. The wounded bull had turned back to hunt him. It came out of the gloom like a black avalanche, goring the laggards out of its way, to cut a path for itself through the racing black river of animals. Its nose was high, the muzzle glistening wetly, and long silver strings of mucus dangled from the flaring nostrils. It came quartering in, and the dusty earth exploded in pale puffs under the savagely driving hooves. "Come, boy!" Ralph yelled desperately at his tired gelding, gathering him with knees and reins, turning him away from the bull's charge, and at the same time cramming a cartridge into the loading slot of the Winchester. The bull closed in a crabbing rush, and Ralph swiveled the rifle and fired point-blank into the gigantic head, knowing there would be no time for another shot. The bull's head flinched, and a splinter of slaty grey horn tore from the huge round bosses, and then the bull steadied himself, moving with the grace of a gazelle on his huge front legs. His head dropped. Ralph could have reached out and touched the crest of shaggy hide between his shoulders. Instead, he jerked his near leg from the stirrup and lifted his knee as high as his chin, just as the bull hooked the massive horns at the gelding's flank. At the place where Ralph's knee had been a moment before, the blunt tip of a black horn crashed into the horse's chest. Ralph heard the ribs crackle and snap like dry sticks, and the air from the gelding's lungs was driven out of his throat in a whistling scream. Horse and rider were lifted high. The gelding was still screaming at the agony of his collapsed chest as Ralph was thrown clear. The rifle spun from his hand, and he landed on his hip and shoulder and rolled to his knees. His right leg was numbed by the shock. It pinned him for precious seconds. The buffalo was braced over the fallen gelding, front legs splayed, armoured head low, blood dribbling and trickling down its massive muscled quarters. And now it hooked at the horse, catching him in the soft of his belly and splitting him open like a cod on a fishwife's block. Soft wet entrails, slippery as cooked spaghetti, were wrapped around the blunt point, and as the bull tossed his head, he stripped them out of the gaping belly cavity. The horse kicked once more, and then was still. Dragging his right leg, Ralph crawled towards the base of a wild teak. "Batso!" he screamed. "Bring the rifle! Bring the horse, Batso!" He could hear the shrill of panic and terror in his own voice, and the bull heard it also. It left the horse, and Ralph heard the splayed hooves thudding in the sandy earth, heard the snort of its breath, and smelled the rank bovine reek of the animal. He howled again, and dragged himself to his feet, hopping on his good leg. He knew he was not going to reach the Mopani, and he whirled to face the enraged bull. It was so close that he could see the wet trail of tears from the corners of its pink-shot, piggy little eyes, running down the shaggy black cheeks, and the spongy tongue, splotched pink and grey, lolling from its jaws as it bellowed at him. The head went down to hook him and split him, as it had the horse. But at that instant another voice bellowed in Sindabeli, "How, thou uglier than death!" The bull checked and pivoted on his stubby forelegs. "Come, thou witch's curse!" Butso was taking the bull off him. He galloped in out of the rolling dust, dragging the spare horse on its lead rein, and he angled in now across the bull's front, taunting it with his voice and flapping his monkey-skin cloak in its face. The bull accepted the lure of the cloak, put his nose down and went after it. The horse that Butso rode was still fresh, and it skittered out of the arc of the great swinging head, and the bull's polished horn glinted at the top of its lunge. "Henshaw!" Butso yelled. "Take this spare horse!" And he dropped the lead rein, sending the free horse down on Ralph, still at full gallop. Ralph crouched in its path, and the grey mare saw him and swerved at the last moment, but Ralph leapt for the saddle and got a hold on the pommel. For a dozen strides he hopped beside the mare, his feet skimming the ground as she carried him away. Then he gathered himself and swung his weight up across her back. His buttocks thumped onto the saddle, and he did not waste time groping for the stirrups. He yanked the spare rifle from the scabbard under his knee and kicked the mare around after the great black bull. The beast was intent on Butso still, chasing him in a grotesque lumbering charge, which covered the ground with uncanny speed. At that moment, a low branch caught the half-naked Matabele and Duna a ringing crack across the shoulder and side of the head. He was thrown sideways. The monkey-skin cloak flew away, flapping like an overfed black crow, and Butso slid further until he was hanging upside down, his head almost brushing the ground between his mount's slashing hooves. Coming up on the bull's blood-splattered quarters, Ralph fired into its back, probing for the spine in the mountain of black hide and bulging muscle. He fired with a mechanical action, cranking the loading handle, and the recoil dinned in upon his ears, so he could barely hear the heavy lead bullets slapping into the bull's body with a sound like a housewife beating a carpet. One of his bullets found the pumping lungs, for there was a sudden torrent of frothy blood blown from both the bull's nostrils, and the wild charge broke down into a short-hampered trot. Ralph came up alongside it, and it turned the great head and looked at him through eyes that swam with the tears of its death agony. Ralph reached across and almost touched the broad forehead under the beetling horns with the muzzle of the rifle. The bull flung his head back from the brain shot, and it dropped silently onto its knees. It never moved again. Ralph galloped on, and caught the bridle of Batso's running horse. He yanked it down to a halt. "Only a Matabele rides with his head in the stirrups, and his feet in the saddle," he gasped, and pulled Butso upright. The dark skin was smeared from Butso's forehead by the rough bark of the branch. The raw flesh was pale pink, and droplets of clear lymph welled out of it like seed pearls. "Henshaw, my little hawk," he replied thickly, "you screamed so loudly I thought you were losing your virginity, with a horn from behind." Ralph spluttered with shaky laughter, almost hysterical with the relief from terror and mortal danger. Butso shook his head to clear it. His eyes came back into focus, and his grin was wicked. "Oh, go back to the women, Henshaw, for you cry like a maiden. Give me your gun and I will win your guinea for you." "See if you can keep up," Ralph told him, and booted his horse into a run. The reaction from terror came upon him in a kind of atavistic madness, the wild, soaring passion of the hunter, and he fell upon the galloping herds in a murderous frenzy. The bushfire overtook them, and put an end to the slaughter at last. Ralph and Butso were almost caught between the enveloping arms of flame, but they broke through with the manes of their horses frizzled and stinking from the heat, and Ralph's shirt scorched in brown patches. Then, from the sanctuary of the backburn, they watched in awe as the fire swept by on either side. It was a gale of heat that whirled burning branches aloft and crashed from tree to tree, leaping a gap 100 feet wide with a deep whooshing roar and bursting the next tree asunder as though it had been hit by a lyddite shell from a howitzer. The flames sucked the air away so that they gasped for breath, and the heat went deep into their lungs, so they coughed like hemp smokers. It seared the exposed skin of their faces, seemed to dry the moisture from their eyeballs and dazzle their vision as though they were staring into the fierce orb of the sun itself. Then the fire was gone, burning away into the west, and they were silent and shaken, awed by the grandeur of its passing and by their own insignificance in the face of such elemental power. It was the following morning before the earth had cooled sufficiently for the skinners to go out to work. The carcasses of the buffalo were half roasted, the hair burned away on the upper side, yet untouched on the side where they had lain against the earth. The skinners worked in a landscape like a hellish vision of Hieronymus Bosch, a desolate and blackened earth, grotesquely twisted bare trees, with the hideous shapes of the vultures crouched in the upper branches. One team of skinners rolled the huge carcasses and made the shallow incisions around the neck, down the limbs and swollen bellies. Then the next team hooked on the bullock teams and stripped off the skin in a single slab, while the third team scooped the coarse white rock salt over the wet hides and spread them in the sun. By the second day, the air was thick with the reek of hundreds of rotting carcasses, and the chorus of cries and howls and croakings of the scavengers was a fitting accompaniment to the scene. Although the dun palls of smoke had cleared, the sky was dark once again with wings. The glossy sable pinions of the crows, the quick sharp stabbing wings of the little kites, and the great majestic spread of the vultures. Around each naked carcass, stripped of its hide and with the obscene pink bellies massively swollen with gases, the hyena whooped and chuckled, and the little dog-like jackal darted in nervously to snatch up a titbit of offal. The vultures hopped and flapped and squabbled, pecking at each other with steely hooked beaks, forcing their way through the enlarged anus of the cadaver into the belly cavern. The tall black-and-white marabou stalks, solemn as undertakers, stalked in with their bright greedy eyes set in the naked face mask. Their crops were naked of feathers also, pink and scalded-looking. They dangled down in front of the throat like the swollen genitalia of some repulsive albino. With their long and powerful bills, they would rip off a strip of flesh on which the greenish iridescent sheen of putrefaction was already blooming. Then they pointed the bill at the sky, gaping and straining with the effort of gobbling the morsel down on top of their already gorged crop. The stink of rotting, scorched flesh and the smell of the scavengers wafted down on the little circle of wagons and kept the women from sleep.
"Ralph, can we leave here tomorrow?" Cathy whispered.
"Why?" he asked sleepily. "You like it here, you said so."
"Not any more," she answered.
And then after a while,
"Ralph, if we go on burning and killing like this, how long will it last?"
He was so startled that he heaved himself on one elbow and peered at her in the candlelight. "What on earth are you talking about, girl?"
"When the animals are all gone, this will no longer be the land I know and love."
"Gone?" He shook his head in sympathy, as though for an idiot child. "Gone? By God, Katie, you saw the herds out there. There are countless, limitless. They are as thick as that all the way north to Khartoum. We could hunt like that every day and not scratch the surface." "No, Katie, they'll never go."
"How many did you kill?" she asked quietly.
"Me? 214. 32 more than your esteemed brother-in-law." Ralph lay back comfortably and pulled her head down onto his chest. "And that cost the cocky bastard a guinea of his ill-gotten loot."
"Between you, almost 400. in a single day's hunting, Ralph." Her voice was so low that he barely heard it, but his own became rough with impatience. "Damn it, Katie, I need the skins. They are mine to take if I want them, and that's all there is to it. Now go to sleep, silly girl."